Hi there, and welcome to the Natural Beauty Podcast. In this podcast, we explore everything related to natural beauty. With guests from the heart of the natural cosmetics industry, we engage in important discussions about the state of the sector. Together, we share insights and exclusive behind-the-scenes stories. I am Satu Mäkinen, founder of the European Natural Beauty Awards, and I will be your host as we dive into these topics. Make sure you click the subscribe or follow button so you won't miss the coming episodes. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Natural Beauty Podcast. Today, I'll be speaking with Judith Fiedler. With 20 years of experience in the cosmetics realm, Judith specializes in natural formulations, packaging, and navigating global regulatory waters. She's a true science enthusiast who can sprinkle magic dust on complex topics and make science fun for everyone. In this podcast episode, Judith shares her behind-the-scenes insights from the world of sustainable cosmetics production, and we will also unpack some common green claims used in the industry. Judith Fiedler was also on board the expert jury of the European Natural Beauty Awards in 2024, so I'm very excited to dive into what sustainability looks like this year. Before we continue with the episode, I'd like to share a couple of words about the sponsor of this episode. This episode is brought to you by Evonik Service Solutions, your trusted partner for crafting high-quality and safe natural cosmetic products. With decades of expertise in formulating skin and hair cosmetics, Evonik's experts possess deep insights into the beauty industry and the latest trends, ready to transform your cosmetic product idea into reality. Whether you are a startup or an established brand, Evonik collaborates with you to develop beauty products with elegant textures and sustainability ingredients, as well as regulatory compliance. Evonik's comprehensive process includes carefully selecting raw materials, designing formulations, and creating active ingredient concepts. They also handle prototype testing for stability, claims, and safety, support technology transfer from lab to production, and manage registration, regulatory issues, and sustainability considerations. Evonik's mission is to assist you in scaling your business by turning your idea into a cosmetic product that meets your needs and exceeds your expectations. Evonik Service Solutions will bring your cosmetic product idea to life. Next, let's jump to today's episode. Welcome to the Natural Beauty Podcast, Judith.
Thank you for having me. I'm very happy that I'm able to join and also to explain a bit about cosmetics.
Absolutely, and the whole industry more so, I suppose, as well. But before we start diving in, would you like to share a little bit about who you are and what you've been doing in the industry lately and also before even?
Yes, for sure. Thank you. I have been grown up in Germany and then moved to Switzerland approximately 20 years ago. I studied cosmetic science in the beginning, also did my master thesis with some cosmetic brands in Germany. And when I moved to Switzerland, it was a first real experience in the lab. So I really worked in the lab bench and developed products from hair care, but also skincare. Further then, I developed myself and moved also in a private label company, had my first leadership role. And that was also the time when I first entered into the natural cosmetic markets, actually, working on products like Natura Line, so already a while ago. And when I really reflect on this, that was a journey. If you see now what is possible with all the raw materials on the market, that's totally different than before, actually. When I then developed myself further, I moved to La Prairie and had the chance to lead the development team there for more than 10 years. But then also recognizing that is not fully my value anymore. So also being very cautious about sustainability. And therefore, I moved out of that business. Now I have a leadership role in a private label company. It's called Steinfeld Swiss, but also founded my own company, One R&D, which is based in Switzerland, obviously. And I take care of a lot of sustainable projects and look into brands, also help them to understand what to do, what better to do, and consult in that area. I also have a lab here in Switzerland and yeah, really also still be in the bench. I love the creams, I love the textures, I love what can be achieved.
Yeah, I guess that is a love that it's not easy to shake away.
Exactly. And you know, when I look around, it's also you see regulatory evolving heavily. So that is also something where brands struggle, or if you don't have the right knowledge on hand, especially like smaller brands and startups, that there is definitely expertise needed to really handle that and also be professional in that area.
Absolutely. That is also something I see a lot through the awards that we're organizing. There are a lot of very tiny brands as well, and a lot of newcomers. And the field is quite Wild West in many ways, whether it's about claims or packaging or anything. So this kind of work that you do is very important for a lot of startups, and I'm sure especially. Would you like to share a little bit about, I mean, you have a very long background in the industry overall. How have you seen the evolution of natural cosmetics? When did it really start, or started really booming in your point of view?
I think when it was first entering the market and when I was first working on sustainable concepts, really working also with certifications like EcoCert at that time, it was very niche market. There were only few players believing in sustainable products, natural products at that time. And it was also the case that suppliers were not ready for that. When you see, you know, there was not even a question of RSPO actually. Palm oil was just palm oil. And today we're so much concerned about that and look around. And as a consumer personally, I think this is really great that we moved into that direction. In the beginning, for me, it was more like to find a solution, how to formulate products, which really also tackle the consumer needs. Because in the beginning, when I look back, it was also when you maybe still remember fragrances, it was very basic fragrances. It was not a full experience for the consumer at that time. It was maybe a bit of lemongrass, it was a lot of citron, lavender, rose, but not really a fragrance which you would like to enjoy and feel on your skin at that time. It was the best you could do at that time, I have to say, but it's totally different if you compare now with today. And also in the formulation technology, it evolved very much. At that time, to find active ingredients was nearly impossible, to be honest. There were some extracts, yes, but also efficacy claims were not so strong and the raw materials were not so much proven. And I think the market was also very small at that time. So people were believing in synthetics and were not so much looking for natural ingredients in general. And I think this is really in the starting point, it was very, very small and it was a trend already. But also acceptance was a challenge from my point of view.
Absolutely. And you've said a couple of times of the belief. So I guess there needs to be certain sort of belief as well of the industry players, as well as, of course, consumers as well, that something is maybe better or something could change as well for the industry to change then in a bigger scale, perhaps. But how do you see the innovative formulations? You mentioned that they have gone forward a lot since the first times.
Absolutely, absolutely. I really, you know, in the beginning, there was only, for example, as a thickener, there was only xanthan gum and maybe carrageenan, and that was it. And what you could achieve with this material, it was a bit of the texture was not very smooth in most cases. It was also when you applied, it was not feeling the right way, actually. And when I look around now, the industry evolved so much. You have so many choices now of biopolymers. You have a lot of suppliers really working on alternative production methods, esterification, and things like this. And also looking around what is in our nature, what we can really bring into our products and have a benefit for the skin. I think it's very important also to always keep in mind for what are you doing that. It's for your skin or for your consumer skin or for the hair, and it's for the better. So it's both. It, for sure, it has to moisture, it has to really care the consumer. At the same time, it should not harm the nature.
There are many points to consider, obviously, already to when we're creating a cosmetic product, but especially when we want to do it sustainably, whether it's about the formulation or packaging or all these different aspects. If we dive in a little bit more about the formulation, what would be the steps to really formulate sustainably? What would be the points to consider?
For a formula developer, but then also in terms of consumer, I think it's really to be cautious of the ingredients you use, to really evaluate what is needed in your formula to have the right performance. Not to include too much, but just the right level, because I think also there it's really like first thing is to understand what is really needed to have a good performance and not to use too much. Reduction actually, still targeted from my point of view, and the formula to be good in the effect, but for sure also safe for the consumer. In any aspect, you know, to use it, but also safe for the environment for most as well. So there are so many things to think through. And, you know, when you start in a lab, one of the biggest challenges, and especially with natural cosmetics, is to bring it into production in bigger scale as well. In a small scale, I can do a lot. To be honest, I can have very complicated manufacturing procedures. I can handle that. But in production, I cannot, because there's a production worker and I have to make sure that they follow the instruction, that they know what to do. And when it's too complicated, that can also be an issue long term, at least. So a lot of things to consider, from raw material to safety to consumer acceptance, stability for sure, because the product also need to last, and so that the consumer and also the retailer can use it in sufficient time and not to have waste too much as well. So a lot of things to think through, actually. And in for me, it's always you have a concept, you look what you want to achieve, and then really to screen the market to see what is out there. What is the best solution for your project?
I love how you say it, like to reduce. First of all, it's a bit like in recycling on any material or being sustainable or living sustainably overall, is we start with using less, I guess. So with whether it's ingredients or other materials, and then how to use them the best, and then what is the recyclability afterwards as well. So kind of easy steps over there. Do you believe it's possible to make products 100% sustainable? I mean, you see different kinds of claims about this, that carbon emission negative and all these kind of claims. How do you see this now?
That's a very hard question, to be honest, because for me, it's really in terms of you would need to be CO2 negative in some aspects. So how can you achieve that? And when I look into carbon neutral, most of this is really done by compensations, right? And that is not really climate neutral in the end, if you compare. So I think what is really a good activity is the Eco Beauty Consortium really looking into the CO2 emission of every raw material to really know first what is your CO2 emission. Because today you don't have real data available for all the raw materials on the market, especially the small companies don't have that data. For natural ingredients, I think one point is if you have something which can really capture CO2 and which you then use in your products, this will definitely have a positive impact. If it can offset all the other CO2 and green gas emission, that's a different question from my point of view, because you also have to consider you have logistics, you have packaging. And it's not only the formula. So how to make that carbon neutral or negative is really a challenge from my point of view. What every brand for sure can do is reduce.
Absolutely.
Reduce their impact, have the right choice for their logistics, for example, maybe produce close by to your factory and things like this, and not to have too much of logistics, especially like air freight is a killer in CO2 emissions. And have a different choice there. And I think to be cautious about that and know what you're aiming for, but also know what is your footprint is a first starting point.
Absolutely. And it's interesting to think that in the end, we're producing new products. So of course, how are we kind of deleting that in a way, or keeping it neutral in the process so that it wouldn't cause more harm? Interesting question, which probably we don't have an answer yet fully either. Do you think a natural cosmetic product is automatically more sustainable than synthetic product? This is a question that we hear a lot as well. What is your take on this?
So if you talk about CO2, I think natural cosmetics has a challenge because you use a lot of products from the nature. And it doesn't mean that your CO2 calculation is better than with synthetics, for example. I think it pays in different levels. And it will be hard for natural cosmetics in the future when you see, for example, that mass market products maybe have a better footprint than the small brands with their natural cosmetic products when you do a full calculation. Synthetics have a role to play. I think there are good ways to produce materials, but it's also a choice. So do you really want to have synthetic ingredients, or do you want to have ingredients from nature? And I think there's still a lot of discussions ongoing, what is acceptable and what's not acceptable. Because if you mimic ingredients and can have a better footprint of these ingredients by generating them in a synthetic way, this is maybe something really to consider. But at the same time, they may be not accepted by certification bodies like Natru, Cosmos, Ecocert, because the method is not recognized as a natural method. Let's say it like this. And I think there's also something for the natural cosmetic market to be aware of and to really think through for the future, because now all the big brands are more developing in the same direction, also narrowing down the gap between natural cosmetics and big brands, actually. I think for natural cosmetics, what is really the differentiator is the use of organic ingredients, for example. And also to really have in mind the good for the world, like say fair trade is a big topic as well. And I think with organic, you're much closer to your supply chain in most cases. A lot of brands really know where the raw material is coming from or they're concerned of. And I think this is something big companies don't do so much. Maybe they start right now, but for natural cosmetic brands, it's kind of in their DNA. That is what I feel.
Absolutely. And it's also interesting, you said that, for example, using natural ingredients affect on the CO2 emissions in a different way. But then where do we step on the scale, where the weight goes rather on that side? Or then what happens with the ingredients after use? Do they end up back in the nature, and would it have harm over there on that side? So it's a bit, where do we put the weight on the scale?
Yeah, and I think, you know, the synthetic polymers, it's a regulation, which is a good regulation because it handles persistence, as you mentioned before. And you will see that brands move out of these ingredients. So a lot of brands will move into more natural raw materials because also biodegradability will become or will be much more important in the future for every brand.
You already mentioned a little bit about different words that brands use or we use when talking about natural cosmetics or cosmetics in general. it can be very confusing for end consumers that don't necessarily know every detail. And words are really used without much proof behind as well. And I know European Union is doing a lot now about the regulation of different kinds of claims. Would you like to talk a little bit about the difference of natural, clean, organic, perhaps as well, that, you know, these are used quite lightly in many cases?
Yes, sure. With pleasure. So I think it's a big topic, right?
Yeah.
So if you look into clean beauty, maybe to start with, there is no definition of clean beauty. So every brand can decide by themselves what is clean beauty for them.
Exactly.
For sure, the consumer has something in their mind, but it doesn't mean that the brand is following like this. So it's also really to prove then, as from a consumer perspective, if the brand is really doing the things the consumer expects. So a lot of these clean beauty brands, they certainly don't use silicones, they don't use PEGs, they don't use parabens, and maybe also no fragrance. But this really depends then also on the concepts they're working on. And there is no review. There is no institution to look into, is it really clean beauty or is it not? So that is, every brand can decide by themselves, this is now clean beauty.
Yeah.
For natural cosmetics, it's a bit about the same, to be honest. Some brands even have a natural image, let's say like this, while they're totally not.
Yeah.
Like Drunk Elephant, for example. When you look into the formulas, it's PEGs, it's silicones, it's everything. Why they have kind of a image to be natural, to be green? Just one brand. And there are many others who play that. Certification for sure is the way to prove that there is a standard applied. And the certification bodies, they check really every product. So from the formula into production is really also the producer buying the raw materials in the right quality. Because you could also have some ingredients which are way cheaper if they're done synthetic and fossil-based. So they really check also the purchasing records and look into all details. So when there is a certification applied, then for sure it's natural cosmetics, which makes it maybe for the consumer also easier to assess. But it also, you know, some brands cannot even afford the certification because the certification also costs. And for smaller brands, they can be natural and they don't have a certificate of authority, but they do the right thing. I think it's very tricky for the consumer. It means also to trust brands. And hopefully there is no mistrust, or let's say there is no misleading information from the brands.
And then organic, another layer.
Another layer on top, right. So organic, I think there are so many certifications out there. But organic is, for me, it's a good way to really know where the materials come from. It's for sure that how the material is grown up or has been farmed is defined, as long as there's also a certification behind. So that is more, from my point of view, the responsibility of the producer of the cosmetics, really to check, to prove that it's really organic, that it's really certified also.
There are many claims, so many words, clean, natural, and organic, and per se, there are no laws or regulations which way you exactly can use them. But then certifications or responsible companies, whether they be smaller companies as well, can then open up what actually are in their products. I get a lot of questions, for example, but this is clean beauty. But for example, that doesn't mean that it's natural at all. It could be fully synthetic and still called clean beauty by somebody. At least usually when natural is used within the cosmetics, it intends there are natural ingredients inside, but to which percentage and which kinds, that is quite a wild west still. So
yeah, and there's, that's also an interesting question, because you know, you have the ISO norms as well, ISO 16128. This is a baseline for natural index actually for raw materials that can be used to calculate the naturality. And when you look into Natru or Cosmos, partly they calculate different. So you don't have one standard. We will see how that evolves over time and if it's like in the end the same, or if it is different, or if, you know, maybe you also find different calculation methods on one product. So it could be that one part is calculated according ISO 16128. And on the other hand, you have a Cosmos certification with a totally different grading.
Yeah, I think it was in the episode we recorded with Dr. Mark Smith from Natru, actually, about this, that the ISO is more like fact data based, and then certifications take into consideration the processes, the fairness of treating people and nature, and all these other value based questions, maybe more on top of it. You mentioned also fair trade before as another word or claim to use. Perhaps that can also differentiate those two.
Yes. And fair trade is, again, another certification in the end, and where the producer really has responsibility to check also the certifications and how that is ensured also, you know, not for one batch delivery, but for all batches you receive.
Absolutely. Should we also throw in a couple of the words and claims that we see a lot, which is, for example, vegan and pizza approved as well, which is quite similar, or cruelty free and whatnot, which are more based on the animal wealth in a way. But
and it's also, you know, it's in terms of what they look into, it's similar, but it's totally different mindset. So when you look into Peter, it's more about the brand, the company, how they handle the things. If you look into the vegan flour, it's certification by product. These are two different levels, actually. What they have in common is no animal-derived ingredients, no animal testing for cosmetics, while there are REACH requirements. So REACH is the chemical regulation of the EU, which forces animal testing, to be honest, which is really a pity because the cosmetics industry tried very hard not to use any animal testing. And then there's a chemical regulation which is saying now you have to do animal testing, so which is totally contradictory. And it's really, you know, there are alternative methods, but they're not overall accepted, unfortunately, not yet. When you look into Peter, I think with Peter, you have at least as a brand, the possibility to state your position and also even kind of claim that you are against animal testing, which is not allowed by a brand, to be honest, because that would not be allowed by law. So there is no way that you could say not animal tested or things like this, because it's written in the law, and then you're not allowed to put something on your products like this.
Yeah.
It's quite hard even for a professional to distinguish between them. And cruelty free is even, you know, brands can decide to have it today on their packaging without any proof.
Vegan is a bit similar.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. If you have the vegan flour, there is a check.
Yeah.
And the check is quite, it's really in detail. But people could even say vegan, yes.
Yeah, I see a lot of claims written, just written on their own, let's say 100% vegan, 100% recycled plastic is something you see a lot, which is a very interesting claim as well. But yeah, vegan, for example, I suppose people are mainly meaning that they're not animal-based products. That, once again, doesn't necessarily mean in cosmetics that it's 100% natural. We were talking about this in one episode, some episodes ago, that it perhaps comes from the fact that vegan in food means 100% plant-based. So perhaps people get the same concept of 100% vegan Okay, so cosmetics means then it's plant-based, which is not always the case.
No, vegan, you know, like you can use a mineral oil. It's vegan.
Yeah.
For example.
Which is funny.
Because it's fossil-based.
Absolutely. What about this 100% recycled plastic? How does this make you feel?
I think it's a challenge, to be honest. If you look into materials, there are materials like PET, which is available in the right quality, where you could say it's 100% recycled plastics. And then it's also safe. For polyolefins, which are like PE or PP, it's a bit more tricky. And I have seen a lot that people say recycled plastic, and then it's maybe chemical recycled plastic, or it's post-industrial recycling, which means it was never entering the market, because you would say recycled materials are only post-consumer recycled goods. But in terms of safety, it's very hard to assess. So for every product you bring to the market, you have to perform a safety assessment in the EU, which means every detail of the formula will be checked by a safety officer. And they will also check the packaging. So is there any harmful ingredient in the packaging? Could there be migration? With recycling and recycling content, it's very tricky to prove that the material is safe. One way is to say you have food material, but this food material is only available today for PET. And then you have to see if you fulfill the standards of food materials with all the other materials like PE, PP. And that means also testing from the suppliers, ensure that you have really documentation on hand. And I think this is now only a starting point, to be honest, because the regulation is evolving now. We see the Packaging Waste Directive to come into force. And there will be strict rules for that. So for contact sensitive packaging, which is everything what's in contact with the formula, with the bulk, for example, and non-sensitive packaging, there will be different levels of recycling materials and recycling content expected. But also for most, the products have to be recyclable. If you look today into the market, a lot of products are not recyclable, or you don't have a stream for that. In Germany, okay, you have the yellow bin, you can put everything in and then it's somehow sorted out. But in other countries, there's nothing yet. So this is also something the EU is preparing, and to really provide sorting. And then to have materials like really separated so that you can really do recycling in a good quality.
This is also a very interesting point about the recycling, that different countries have different systems and capabilities of handling waste. But in the end, for example, cosmetics are sold over borders. So they might be produced in one country and sent to other side of the world, which has different kind of recycling systems. So this is an interesting point, maybe to take more into consideration as well when thinking about the packaging.
Yeah, that's true. If you look around the world, I think you can nearly everywhere recycle glass. Mm-hmm. So that is one material which nearly every country is able to handle. Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, it's a quite CO2 impactful material.
Heavy.
Because of the production, the weight, exactly. So your logistics and things like this, there is not a perfect choice, I think, today. It's very hard for brand owners to decide what packaging to consider, what is the best choice. When I look into the natural cosmetic markets, a lot of brands decided for glass for good reason. I think also because it reflects value. There is not much of interaction of the bulk and the packaging, which is good for the product. Mm. However, also like if you decorate a lot, then the recyclability is also impacted. Mm. So if you imagine you have a product which is maybe even natural, and then there is a lacquer put on the glass, fully covering the glass, then the glass will be sorted out and will not be recycled because it would have impact on all the other elements in the glass sorting. So even one piece can have a negative impact. But it's the same then also for the plastic. So it's really also up to the consumer if they have a beverage bottle, really to sort it into the beverage bin and not to bring it to the recycling streams, for example, so that it's still like food material to food material. And then you can close the circle and reuse it also in the food area. That's actually the best solution, I think. So PET is another option to move into because you have nearly this closed loop and the weight is less impactful, let's say it like this. But for sure also consumers have an opinion and they expect maybe that a natural cosmetic brand is using glass.
All these thoughts that consumers may have. Consumers do not always know everything you just said about all the points that need to be taken into consideration, whether we're shipping far or all kinds of things. So they also influence the choice of the material. And often when we see just the final product without understanding deeper, we might think like, oh, okay, plastic is not good, so I'm not going to buy that. But we don't know all the options, and I don't know if that makes sense.
Yeah, it makes perfect sense. It is opinion, let's say it like this. Every consumer has an opinion. That's the
Exactly. What I think I wanted to say was that we need more education from this, though, that people would understand more what are the options and what actually affect behind the scenes in a way.
True, very true.
I wanted to kind of ask you there, of course, like you said, it's not the simplest solution to pick a packaging, especially if you're a newcomer in the business or you have a startup brand or anything. But where would it be important or perhaps the easiest to start with when you think about your packaging options and which one you would like to choose? What would you tell to a newcomer brand, for example?
For me, glass is still a good solution. Minimalistic way decorated so that it's fully recyclable. And maybe a jar is better than a dispenser, to be honest. But on the other hand, if you have a natural cosmetic brand, you do not want to preserve the product too much. So a dispenser is still a good solution, while the dispenser itself, so the pump on top, is not fully recyclable today. But I hope also the industry will evolve as the raw material suppliers did. Now it's the time for the packaging actually to evolve and find new solutions. And when there is a choice for plastics, while the EU has not included in the Packaging Waste Directive bioplastics, it's still something to consider for natural cosmetic brands, from my point of view, as long as it's side streams of food and not feedstock materials. I think that is also something really to keep in mind and to look into because it makes no sense to create packaging from food source, from my point of view, when you don't want to have fossil based, but then really to know what is the stream. And where is it coming from? That's very important from my point of view. And then always to figure out what is the best usability also for your product and to challenge your suppliers and really talk to them and really say, hey, this is important for me. And how can we minimize materials? So I think the first step in every discussion is how can we use as less as possible material? Because that will have the biggest impact in the end.
Absolutely. Do you have any thoughts? How can consumers evaluate this? For example, if a product is sustainable or not, whether it comes to the content, the ingredients, or the packaging, or overall production. I mean, you mentioned certifications. It's of course one big part, but is there anything, any other way to know?
It's very hard, I would say, to be honest. It's not super clear. It really, I think, reach out to brands, ask them, really make them aware that consumers are concerned, they want to know, and then brands will also prepare in that way, and they will They're also forced by industry and by the government to be reliable, to be truthful. And therefore, I think it's also an obligation of the brands to answer correctly. I've never seen a brand not answering correctly, to be honest. So really to go to the brand and ask them, what are you doing to be more sustainable?
And brands love to talk about it, especially if they're doing things well and really putting their effort into becoming more sustainable. They really love to share and talk further and maybe have new ideas from also from the consumers and everything. So if you don't get an answer back from the brand, that perhaps is the answer as well sometimes.
Exactly. Then I would look around for a new brand,
Yeah,
to be
same.
honest.
Exactly. Perhaps another question from the content itself. So the ingredients, transparency in the ingredient sourcing is also a big topic that the certifications also look into. Is there something else that you would like to mention? What do you see in the industry? Is it already getting towards transparent direction since also consumers are really looking for that, or is it still a big elephant in the room somehow?
I think it's, I think smaller brands do that better, to be honest, than bigger brands. When you look into supply chains, I think for smaller brands it's much easier because maybe they only have one source of material and not multiple sources. They only have one production and they don't have two productions and things like this. Because if you go for or you look into bigger brands and companies, they also want to have continued business. So then they start to multiply their production sites. They look into risk reduction, so they have more than one source for ingredients. So it's a kind of complex system behind. If you are a smaller brand, what I have seen is that the people are much closer to the suppliers, that they really try to have more information available. And that makes it easier. But when you look into the communication, I think there is not much of communication in that direction yet. Like to say, I don't know, my raw materials are coming from Europe or things like this. And it's also hard to state that, to be honest, because often when you buy ingredients, it's not that it's not necessarily the manufacturer you buy from. You often have distributors. Which are in between, and sometimes even traders. So then it's really effort for the brand to make sure the brand knows where the things come from.
For sure, that can be a challenge. Even very tiny brands, when they start out, often ingredients can be bought kind of through the middlemen. That has been the case at times, that also the product makers don't always know exactly where the ingredients come from. And that is quite interesting to see that the people that are really into creating natural brands might not always know everything about the products, even though they do have the good heart of trying to do something different. Would you have any solutions for this?
I think also one of the struggles is that small brands are small. So you have to be able to buy the ingredients and then it's often distributor. But there are solutions like, for example, if you have like oils, I think with these kind of ingredients it's much easier to understand where they're coming from. And you could even have regional supply on that ingredients, for example.
Interesting. I had one question noted here about the fact that some leading traditional ingredient making companies also provide natural ingredients. Do you think there's a sense for a natural cosmetic brand to buy ingredients from them rather than perhaps someone smaller maker, perhaps who is making only natural ingredients?
If you really look into all formats you want to bring to the market, like creams, serums, things like this, there's nearly no way to not use that big companies, to be honest, because they have a strong R&D team. They bring the innovations to the market. They can invest in resources and can invest in innovation. And therefore, they also drive the natural ingredients. To be honest, that is for smaller suppliers not so easy. For sure, there are startups, and I think it's also cosmetic brands, they should support these small startups. At the same time, it's very hard also to get the documents you need for registration, for safety, if there's a startup involved. And there's also a lot of investment needed to have all the data on hand, to be honest. It's very hard for small brands to have all that data on hand, and also investment in innovation.
So the bigger players in certain way still hold the keys. Of course, they do have knowledge and long history of a lot of things when it comes to formulation and cosmetics. So kind of makes sense that they use that also, of course, in creating natural ingredients then.
But for sure, if there are multiple suppliers, then really for the cosmetic brand, not only to look for the costs, but to the overall aspects.
Absolutely. And talking about overall aspects, what is your take on holistic beauty? This kind of concept of seeing beauty a little bit deeper than just the cosmetics that we've been talking the whole podcast about. What do you think? Do you see this as a trend or also as part of taking into consideration when creating a formulation or a new product?
Holistic beauty is a lot of different concepts when I look into the market. It can be Ayurveda, for example. I have seen like really to have this well-being aspect, to have even yoga involved, but also other concepts are more like to have also, for example, fragrances that stimulate and so-called neuroscience a bit. And there are a lot of topics in that area. I think it's the word holistic beauty is a buzzword for me. But to bring it into the context, it is not a trend. I think it will stay. Because also, you know, when you look into cosmetics, it's so much of emotions. You smell it, you feel it. And that is something where you can have positive impact. And on the other hand, you can even strengthen it with other routines, for example, you may have, like your yoga in the morning, or also when you look into your hormones, what are your hormones doing to you in every month, let's say, like this. So how to bring that into the game, and also to have a choice. In the end, for me, it's also to have a choice in every aspect, to be honest.
I love this. You put it very well, very well together. Makes total sense. Perhaps this is definitely the future of beauty or natural cosmetics. I definitely hope so. Are there any other trends or things that you think we will see in the future?
I think there will be even more active ingredients on the market being natural. You know, in the past, peptides were very efficient and helping with wrinkles and things like this, also cleaner skin. And now we see that a lot of ingredients come to the market being natural and delivering nearly the same results or even outperforming, which is great. And I think there will be more of that. Then, as I said before, this neurocosmetics or neuroscience is a topic on the market, and there are a lot of brands working on that. A lot of materials developed with AI input, and that will also increase, in my opinion, because you the knowledge you have out there is so big. So when you look for an activity, maybe today you do not know that that flower or plant or tree is helping in that, but if you have the data resource, it can be, in the end, you find activities and you find then therefore also actives for the natural cosmetic market. And so that you really can have dedicated efficacy concepts and even stronger ones. That I think will also impact the raw material market, and AI will also impact in terms of how products are developed and also production. So how can you streamline and reduce your impact in production? I think there can AI can also be of help.
Yeah, AI is a big word for the moment already, but also of course for the near and far future. How it can be helpful? Do you think there could be anything that it could go against natural cosmetics or the naturalness of cosmetics industry?
Not necessarily. I think it's more in terms of who has the decision power in the end. If an AI system is designed to take a decision, critical decisions, then it's crucial from my point of view. If it's to help to generate data, to analyze data, to really help in decision making or to define the right investment, I think it's a positive. Today, maybe it's still kind of a claim for me. I think in the future, this will be our new natural way of living, actually. So we will have in some aspects help of AI, where hopefully it doesn't is a pain, you know. For some activities, I would not like to have AI involved. So if it's my personal decision, I would like still to have my personal decision, to be honest, and not someone like saying, now you have to do this and that. But in certain situations, it can help, it can make our life easier, to be honest.
It's a bit like we say, for example, Google, that we are free to Google and see all the information and option, but we're still the one making the decision which link we believe. Is it Wikipedia or another website? But if Google would tell you this is the truth, then that would be kind of perhaps what we would be comparing to. Yeah, interesting to see where things are going overall, but especially with cosmetics industry and natural cosmetics industry. Would you have any last words, perhaps last advice? I know we do have quite a few of smaller brand owners and new makers listening for the upcoming times and years, where to focus on. Or
for me, is really have your vision and follow your vision.
Yeah.
And really make everything in the aim of your vision and not to go for compromise, maybe too much.
Mm.
Because I know if you know you have a brand, you develop a brand and you have suppliers, for sure it can be hard discussion with the suppliers, but don't go for the compromise too early.
That's a good advice. I think in general in life, there are of course moments compromising is helpful, keeping in the peace and everything. But especially when you're creating something of your vision, compromise will not get you as far as your real vision. Well put. Great advice. Well, I'd like to thank you for joining to the Natural Beauty Podcast today. We've had quite a package of industry talk here. If somebody is interested in contacting you and perhaps talking more about the sustainable aspects of natural cosmetics, where can they reach out to you and what could you help them with?
Yeah, best to reach out through LinkedIn. I'm active there. You can find me there. And for me, where I can help is really like in the full concept of products, helping in formula development, but also packaging decision, helping in regulatory aspects and supporting them also in terms of registration if needed. So if you want to bring your product to other regions like Asia or America, please feel free to reach out. I can be there and help you in that as well. Because it's kind of challenging for brands really to prepare the systems, especially if you're a startup, and that you have really all the data you need on hand and that the processes are also established like this.
Mm. Do you work with brands from all over the world? I know we do have global listeners. So
yes, I do. I do. And also from my past, when I was leading the La Prairie team, development team, therefore, I have contacts in all parts of the world, actually.
Amazing. So Judith can be found on LinkedIn. I can also link your LinkedIn in the show notes below. So anybody who's very excited to talk with you now can click directly from there. So it will be a bit simpler.
Yes.
I would like to thank you. It's been very insightful and amazing to talk with you.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Satu. It was really a great experience. I enjoyed every minute.
Thank you so much for this chat and talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Thank you so much, Satu. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Natural Beauty Podcast. Make sure you have subscribed or you follow the podcast so you won't miss the coming episodes. If you know someone who would love to know more about the subjects that we discuss in this podcast, make sure to share this episode. Join the conversation on our social media channels as well, on Instagram and LinkedIn at European Natural Beauty Awards. Until the next episode, bye-bye.